Hello and welcome to the Hockey Hurts podcast for October 15th of 2023. I'm Ryan Wilson, Penguins writer for HockeyBuzz.com.
I'm Cameron Walsh from HockeyHits.com.
And welcome back. We are back. We have a new Penguins season here. Three games in. We're broadcasting on Sunday afternoon here in the States. And the Penguins are 2-1 heading into a light week where they only play Wednesday and Saturday, so we felt like this was a good time to kind of take the temperature of how the team's doing, how things look with the first few games that have been played, especially considering how many new faces are on the team, new GM, new a lot of stuff, but we still have some of the old classics doing their thing too. So Cam, good to talk to you again.
Hello. It's good to be back. It's good to... Hopefully we can get this consistent this season and not have to go, nah, it's not going to work.
So, what are your thoughts so far, three games in?
This will be much more interesting to watch this year than the last couple, which is good. Like, it had sort of been a little bit of rinse and repeat. There's new players. There's one ridiculously fun and exciting player to watch. And thus far, the three games in, win, lose, or tie, I'm going to enjoy the season. Put it that way.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic that they'll be functional as far as, like, contending, playoffs, maybe win a round. Who knows if Jari plays like he's capable. Maybe two rounds. Who knows? You know, the Stanley Cup, this isn't cup or bust anymore. At least for me.
This is just enjoy it.
I understand the players are cup or bust, but as yes. Far as like an observer, my expectations, I think I'm trying to keep realistic so that it's not like you're not chasing this thing that is likely not going to happen. But they do, again, as they've had for pretty much this entire run, the hard-to-get pieces are still there. Go ahead.
You're absolutely right. Interestingly, those hard-to-get pieces look a hell of a lot fresher at the start of this season than they did last season. It's one of those odd things that the extra month and a half off of no hockey as opposed to deathly hockey may be beneficial.
And just mentally knowing that Ron Hextall is not running this team, and the guy that is, is making an effort for them. Whether it works or not, it's a different thing. But there is a real effort that was made over the summer of, okay, this team was broken, I'm trying to fix it. Not, no, this is fine, actually, and I'm just going to be an idiot, and they're going to pay me money. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's been good to watch. It's interesting that those efforts to try and fix it, as you say, may or may not work. But at least you know that at the deadline or throughout the season, if he can see that it's not working, he's not going to sit in his hands. He will try to do something, which is much better as a fan to watch as well.
So back to your point, very watchable games for me, even though during stretches of these games I thought they were outplayed, and you know, that's going to happen over the course of a year, but it wasn't like outplayed and nothing good could possibly happen, because that's just not the reality of the situation. They have too many dynamic players, and let's just bring up the new one, Erik Karlsson. Even if he's going to make mistakes, and that's built into my opinion of him already. I mean, I care if he makes a mistake and, like, a goal is given up and he's, like, made a bad play. Of course, I'm not saying, like, that's okay. I'm saying that's okay because of all the other kick-ass stuff he's going to do. It's going to, you know, outweigh that. And we're starting to see some of the little things that, like, you know, he's been one of my favorite non-Penguin players. I think years ago somebody asked me, what non-Penguin would you add to the team, and I think my answer, like, back way back then was Erik Karlsson, and now he's here.
Yeah.
And you know all the obvious stuff that he does, but the goal the other night that I think was it Geno's goal against the Capitals to open things up, he pinched on a faceoff. It was kind of a 50-ish, 50-50 puck. It was Alex Ovechkin barreling down on it. He won the battle, kept it in, and then the play resulted in the east-to-west pass into the slot, which led to Malkin being wide open. You know, to have the confidence to be like, yeah, I know who's coming there. I might get drilled, which, by the way, he did later that game. Ovechkin ran it, ran him pretty good, clean. And he knows that, but he still stepped in, made the play composed. He didn't just mash it back in. The puck went to somebody. I think things like that are the little things that he's going to bring to the table. And, of course, like, he's juking people out on the blue line flat-footed, things like that that just create time and space. So if he's on the ice with one of the top six lines, any time you can steal back a possession through those skills and give them more cracks at it, the good things are going to happen, and they will, and they have. So
yeah,
that part's really fun. Like, they could be getting their teeth kicked in all game, but they can attack out of nothing because Carlson just is that kind of player. And it's really added a fun dynamic for me watching the games of this unknown can still happen. Whereas the last couple of years, not that like Crosby and Malkin can't still do those things, or even, Chris Letang's still here. He can do that
apparently
too. It just was so boring a lot of the times.
Yeah, it's interesting for me watching Carlson. Not that I expected him to get 101 points again, but I reckon he's only going to get, and I say only, 60 points this season. And the reason for that is he will start a lot of offense, he will drive a lot of the play, but because he goes and creates open space, Crosby, Malkin, Gensel, Letang, Rust, they will make the extra pass that will mean he will not get a secondary assist on a lot of plays. And the reason they're able to do that is that they're given an extra half a second of time and space, and they'll do that. And that's where I reckon a lot of the scoring will come from. Because there were a few times where I've gone, oh, Carlson will get an assist on that. And then it's like, no, he won't, because they went and made the extra play. And I think that'll be the difference with him there. And people will go, he wasn't that good this year. But you can see where his value is. Like, because of his defensive foibles, people are like, he's soft. But it's not. Everything you just said about that stuff with Ovechkin, that's where he has courage. Not just because if it goes wrong, it looks bad the other way. Physically, that is a massive challenge to take on. And he does that regularly. And, it's much more fun to watch this team because they've got two defensive pairings that can push the play now. And Pettersson is more than capable of being smart enough, I think, to back off enough that Carlson is confident to go every time he wants to go.
Yeah. It's a nice change of pace.
Yeah, it's nice to see a team be able to drive straight out of the defensive zone and not be terrified when it's on the stick of anyone but Letang. Because Pettersson, I think, has done a very good job of not being Carlson-centric. Like, he hasn't just gone, oh, I've got to get the puck onto Carlson's stick. He's literally just got there and gone, no, I can go here. I've got time and space. I'm going to go. And that's I think, very impressive considering, you know, all the hype that's come around with Carlson coming in. And the other defenseman that's coming, Graves, I've liked what I've seen so far. He's going to cop a hell of a lot of penalties, though, because I've seen some of those calls, and I'm like, I don't think that's a penalty. He's going to go in the box an awful lot this season, I think.
I'll tell you what, I'm okay with that because it means the Penguins will also be on the right side of those. And
hope so.
The power play looked not great in the preseason, but that's why it's kind of the preseason and whatever. I think they're starting to get their legs on them. I think they're starting to get the personnel. I think they started with the Letang Carlson both being out there. I think it's shifted to Raquel taking Letang's spot. Would that be that sound about correct?
Yeah, it's not gonna it's gonna be different all year. They're just gonna slot guys in until they get a 3 or 4 game run where it looks impossible to stop.
I think this is the one that'll be rolled out there the most, barring like injury stuff.
Yeah.
You know, go figure that Jake Ensel coming back helped the power play. Gee, weird.
Funny that.
But I think back to the Carlson thing. I think Letang has always done a really nice job on the power play. I have my little, you know, things about, you know, the micromanaging kind of it. I guess it's not micromanaging when he's not shooting. Like, that was always my big beef with him, is that the penalty killers don't have to respect the shooting lane. It keeps them in their shape, and it takes away the passing stuff.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
Carlson, on the other hand, is not going to be afraid to shoot. They have to respect the lane, which is going to open up something I saw on Saturday night that I miss it so much from being a regular thing. I don't think we've had it on a regular basis since Sergei Gonchar left, and that is the Malkin one-timer from the right circle. And now that the killers have to respect Carlson's shot, those side opportunities on each circle are going to be there. And furthermore, I do trust Carlson a little more than Letang to put the puck in the wheelhouse so Malkin can lean into it and not have to adjust. And he wired it off the post on Saturday.
Yeah, that looked great.
You're going to see more of that. Now, after the puck goes off the post, there's a scramble. If it stays in play or rebound save, whatever. Now the penalty killers are running around. Now you can do your east-west lane because they've lost their shape. And I think as long as the Penguins commit to shooting, now that they have Carlson and Malkin up top, there's really no reason not to. And I think Raquel's plenty good enough to shoot a one-timer from the left side.
Oh, great.
Now you have Sid and Gensel down low, and I love the idea of that. So
Sid's the best down low player in the game, has been, and I feel like he should have been down there way earlier in his career. But, you know, the fight for the half wall was...
I'm not anti him right half wall. Like, I can understand tactically what the reasons for it. It's when he was on, like, the left half wall or the left point, it's like, all right.
What are you doing?
Let's not maybe do that. Let's keep him over on the other side at a minimum, but preferably, given the kinds of players they have down low, is I think the play. And you know, he scored, he's got 3 goals on the year so far, so on pace for 82.
They've come out of the blocks like a house on fire offensively. It's looked good. I've been happy with the aggressiveness. You are correct that they do kind of get caved in a bit, but this team will get caved in, and they've bent but not broken, really. It's felt, to be honest. The curiosity will be that bottom six, but we're not really talking about them at the moment.
No, we'll get there, trust me. I do want to... So, I've been entertained. I like watching the games again. For a while there, it was just something I kind of had to do. But I do want to frame it. I don't want to be super negative on them. They're 2-1, and mostly the things that they're good at, they're doing. But Blackhawks, Capitals, Flames don't scream to me top-end NHL teams.
No, correct.
So I am curious when they finally start ramping the schedule up a little bit and they're not fresh like the beginning of the year, how that's going to look. This week they have, God, who do they have? Is it?
They've only got two this week, so this week's not the week to think about it.
St. Louis and, I wrote it this morning. I can't even remember. It's just the two games, though.
Detroit.
Detroit and St. Louis. Neither of those I would consider. So, like, this is a great opportunity to start the year, get the team gelling, getting used to each other, and most importantly, picking up standings points. They messed up opening night, but opening night, it's probably the longest. It is the longest Sid's gone without playing hockey, like a real game ever, since.
True. Yeah,
his rookie season, and you know, they should win that game, but they should have also beat the Blackhawks last year, and it's why they missed the playoffs in the first place. So
very good point. Interestingly, on to the topic of still on the, you go to the next week, Dallas, Colorado, Ottawa.
Yeah, so
like
that,
if you want to get a feel. And they're game on, game off, game on, game off. If you want to get a feel for whether they're going to be around about ballparkish, that's probably not a bad murderer's row of teams, two established and one wanting to be a playoff contender. That's not a bad week to work it out.
Colorado, you know, is, of course, excellent. Dallas, still very strong team. Ottawa, I don't know, but I kind of feel like they've got some players that are halfway decent, so they'll be not quite as bad as they've been. So we're going to learn as the games go, as we do every year. We learn as the games go a little bit about how this Penguins team is going to operate. So before we do eventually get into that bottom six, I do want to, you know, give kudos to the top six. They've scored literally every goal this year through three games.
That's what you can do.
So they were going to be a strength of this team, and they have been so far. Sidney Crosby's been came out of the gate hot, scoring the three goals in the first two games. Evgeny Malkin, 4-point night against Washington, another two last night. He's got 6 points, and he not only is he doing great on ice, and it's great to see him still have his jump. His line, the second line with Riley Smith and Rickard Rakell, is leading the forwards in expected goals for percentage. So they've been the best line as far as like driving play and that kind of stuff, which is great to see. Malkin had a great expected goals for percentage last year. So he's picking up right where he left off. And, you know, we were left in limbo last year with his knee surgery, and he came back and had a marvelous season, and he's off to a great start this year, and he's even bringing it off the ice, because his interviews last night were pretty funny. He said they should end the season so he can win the Hart Trophy, because I think he's tied for the league lead in points, maybe, something like that. And then he's made a joke about he just caught Mogilny on the Russian goal scoring list and said he's coming for Ovi now, which he's like,
it's
250
nice
behind
it's
him.
Nice. He get there. It's nice that he's comfortable enough now to, you know, all the players always say he's funny and that, but you don't get to see it as he's gotten older. He's gotten more comfortable to be out and about and open, which is good. Because it's always nice to see that side of the players, particularly when they get to the end, because you get a better feel for who they are/were when they wrap up, which is good. Riley Smith excites me. He looks likely to score a hell of a lot with Malkin, and I do sit there and go, he can probably get on a tear. It would be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see what his goal numbers are at the end of the season.
Well, he might be at the beginning of a tear, because he's got a goal in back-to-back games.
Yeah, and look good against Chicago as well. So
yeah, his style feels good for
Malkin.
I think both goals were in transition off turnovers, and my brother, who lives in Vegas, and is a season ticket holder, he told me that he'd be a pretty good fit coming over when the trade was originally made. And I didn't like the idea of Jason Zucker moving on, considering the kind of year that he had last year. But understandable with the $5 million or in change he got from Arizona. He was still looking for money, but you know, he'll be traded to a playoff contender if Arizona is indeed not that. But Riley Smith coming in, that's really good piece of business to slide the Zucker out and get Riley Smith in. Looks like he shoots the puck quite well. Good down low by the net. Great in transition, and also a penalty killer, so defensively responsible as well. And
just feels like the three of them click. Like,
they're all very Malkin's, smart players.
Yeah, like Malkin's one of those players, like all top elite level players. So, you know, obviously Sid the same, and all the other top level guys, they can adjust what they need to do to fit the players around them, right? It feels like Raquel and Smith are more the type of players that Malkin is more comfortable playing with, where he can just be Gino and everything else works around him. Whereas it felt like with Zucker, he kind of had to adjust a little bit, because Zucker is different to Smith and Raquel in regards to the type of stuff that he can do and does. It feels a lot more like the back-to-backs with the way Malkin is playing, as opposed to sort of adjusting to the way... And, or maybe it's just the fact that it's another year on from his knee surgery, that he's got that a little bit more jump and pop after a little bit more of rest as well. So, but yeah, so far, three games in, they're definitely winning the cup, right?
Yeah, sure. yeah, that line is doing what they need to do, and Sid's really got no excuse as far as he has Guentzel and Rust, who, you know, that's kind of his preference. And the beautiful part about the roster construction right now is Sid always got what he wanted. But true. Malkin got whatever was left, which, you know, at times was more than adequate and sometimes very good, but a lot of times not
as good.
And I'm looking at the ice time, and, you know, mind you, we are so early in this, but Erik Karlsson is Malkin's top defensive. He's been on the ice with Karlsson for 20 minutes and 30 seconds. Pettersson at 17 minutes. And then Letang at about 17 minutes. So it's a big deal to have people from the back, and I include Pettersson in this, to facilitate and help that transition game. Whereas before, you know, if Letang's going to be with Sid, and then Malkin's kind of stuck with, you know, Jeff Petrie and whatever else they wanted to do.
Yeah,
and mind you, I thought Jeff Petrie, you know, I was trying to, you know, look glass half full when that trade was made, that Petrie should have been able to help on that end, and, you know, it didn't work out that way at all, really. So it's really nice to see that second line just not only tangible offense, but they are doing really well expected goals. So Riley Smith 67.5%, Malkin's about 65%, and Raquel 63%. They're the best three forwards on the team right now, so that's really good.
I wonder if they'll fly the zone, because they're going to have Karlsson. It feels like they're going to have Karlsson more often than not. His ability to nail a stretch pass, tape to tape, or
second to none.
Yeah, absolutely, right? So I do wonder, once they get comfortable 15, 20 games in, whether you start to see one of the three of them fly the coop early once it's on his stick and, you know, really, really stretch it out, because he's going to get it ballparkish at worst, I feel, as opposed to That's all. It's just one of those things where it wouldn't surprise me to see a lot more transition from Geno's line, which, as you said, him and Smith look great together in transition. Because you can just see Carlson, he gets the puck. The first thing he does is look straight up. He seems to have this sixth sense of where everybody is on the ice, like directly around him, so he can look up to see what the hell's going on before he thinks about even going, oh, do I have to be protective of the puck? And if you can get out there and go, I am excited to watch the team just for the fun value of that top six.
And that's going to be part of the gelling, being ready for Carlson to be dynamic and where he likes to look. That will get figured out. Those are three smart players. Malkin will figure Carlson out and vice versa on what their preferences are. And that's one of the most exciting parts of all of this, is we're three games in and we can already see that process is getting there, and it's going to continue to be, I think, get better and better. Because it, you know how a lot of times people have said it's tough to play with Sid, maybe, even though I kind of roll my eyes a little bit at that. It's not tough to play with Sid, but if you want to maximize playing with Sid, you do have to kind of be ready in moments where you normally don't have to be ready.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's...
That'll be the Carlson challenge.
That's identical in the same regards, Carlson being the defense version of that, where if he's got the puck, you just need to be ready that it's coming, and it's going to be on your forehand, and there's a scoring chance that's going to be there, so be ready for it. And once they get all that adjusted, that'll be pretty cool.
Banking, like you said, banking the points early now will give me pause for the middle of the season in regards to go, right, can they coast through and win 3 of 5 for the sort of the middle section of the season and just make sure that they ramp up for the last 15 going in hot.
Mm-hmm.
That everything's clicking, that they feel good with that. That's what I would like to see for a team of this age.
And the banking the points now, one development that was a little surprising to me was having Gensel opening night.
Which, fantastic, but thought they might have waited just to make sure, but from the looks of the way he's going, good decision.
So we thought, 5-6 games, and that's manageable. Yeah. But they got it right in the sense of he needed to get the surgery. They did it. The issue should be corrected, and they felt like he could come back, so he came back opening night, and he's got 6 points in 3 games?
Yeah.
So that's a huge deal, because let's pretend he's not in the lineup. What's the top six look like? Does Sid take Raquel?
Yep.
And then Malkin's left with probably a Nylander gets called up or something.
You would hope so, because you don't want the other six jumping up on there. To be honest.
Okay, why don't we just do it? Because we're just going to keep tap dancing around it, I suppose. We wanted to start positive, and we did. There's a lot going on that I like.
Very.
We knew, and I say we, I feel like we talked about this in maybe even July, the last podcast. Going in, the weakness of this team was going to be the bottom six forward group, even if it was improved from last year. But when we say improved from last year, and they say the bar is low, the bar wasn't even on the floor to step over. It was below the floor level.
You don't want them to get caved in. Now, is that bar high enough for you and me? I don't know if it is.
Depends on what the aspirations are.
Yeah.
So, for me, my preference is not to ever really acquire a lot of defense-first forwards, because I feel like you can always find those. I think Kyle Dubas should have been looking for players with a little more offensive flair to it.
Well, Tatar, you were very good, like bullish on trying to acquire Tatar.
And I think they may have tried.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't sit here and say like they didn't do enough. Like if the player doesn't want to, like he went to Colorado on the money that Pittsburgh had to sign him at. So like I get it. Like
yep.
Tatar going to Colorado is like yep okay yep that makes sense. But it was disappointing because I felt like that was the perfect player price point to alleviate some of the depth scoring problems, is to have a player like that. And it wasn't to be. So now, I talked about the Malkin line being the top forwards on the team. Well, we are going to shift gears and the third line with Lars Eller, Drew O'Connor, and Jansen Harkins are the bottom three players on the team in expected goals for percentage. Not forwards, just players, period. And Jansen Harkins is at 25%. And he was, picked off of waivers, and that's fine. But there's a lot of competition at that tier, like at that level of player. So there's no need to like, okay, well, does he deserve more than it doesn't matter. He's got a 25% expected goals for percentage. The bottom six hasn't produced anything, not a point. So where's Radim Zahorna? Where's Alex Nylander? Where's who am I missing here? There's other players, but those are the two that jump to my head.
They're the two that you, after everything that you've seen in the last 12 to 18 months, you do get there and think to yourself, they're at least someone who would force the opposition to go, well, we probably just need to make, you know what I mean? There's a tiny bit of a threat there. Like, Jeff Carter got a breakaway against Calgary, and it's like if there's, well, semi-breakaway, I should say, and just missed the net. Like, if there's ever a player on that bottom six of this team that would be grabbing the stick so tight, knowing that every time he gets into a scoring chance, has to score, it would be him. And I felt like that showed in that Calgary game. Because all those guys know that they have to produce something. Otherwise, old school stats, they'll be minus 75 by the end of the year.
Colin White's the other one, I suppose. Vinny Hinostroza. Yeah. Like, Valtteri Pustinen would be the one. Actually. He has defensive miscues as well, but like, I'm watching a third line that has a 25% expected goals for percentage. You can't tell me he's been defensively great. Like,
Do you think Sullivan has the courage to try and set up a third line similar to the HBK? Like, to literally get there and go, fuck it, this quite clearly isn't working. Let's try and generate some offense out of it and bring some of those young kids in that are going to have those, well, some of them aren't young, but the other players in.
Nobody's young. They're the oldest team in the league.
Yeah, I know. I said that and I'm like, what am I saying? But to bring those other players in and to have them go, screw it. Because the HBK line was no traditional third line in hockey. It was there to generate offense and made glaring errors, but could produce the other way and forced teams to change the way. That's the problem for me. It's like Sullivan's lost his courage because he doesn't trust the offensive output of those particular players to be high enough to recover for the mistakes that they're quite clearly going to make. But as a fan, it'll be just more fun to watch. So that's why I want that to occur. And I understand why a coach wouldn't want to do it.
And effectively, can't really be much worse than the current third line.
Correct.
Not that that's...
Absolutely right.
Not that it's going to stay quite where it is right now, but...
No. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
They're... there are a lot of different timelines the last three games where the Stars don't have those goals, even if they're playing well, and they drop all three games because the depth scoring wasn't there. There are going to be games where the top six does not produce, and you're going to have to ask yourself, where is it being made up? And right now, I just don't see a lot there, unfortunately.
Carter's the only one in the bottom six that has scoring pedigree of those six. And he's cooked. Like, we all know he's cooked. That's fine and that kind of stuff. But, like, Lars Eller, even when he was in his prime, was not somebody that generated a lot of offense. And I sit there and go, you're not really giving yourself a chance to force the opposition to think twice about your bottom six. They're almost like, hopefully we can just hang with the top six and then we'll destroy their bottom six, right? And I know that the bottom three are only going to be on the ice even strength for maybe 6 or 7 minutes, but that's enough to cost you a game. I mean, Pittsburgh won the Calgary game in the first 6 minutes of the third period. Bang, bang, bang. Done.
And the second period was not a good period. They got their ass kicked.
No.
So,
yep.
Them coming out like gangbusters with those two quick goals really shifted that entire game.
Yeah.
And but that's part of having those types of players, is that can happen. It's just we know how it works come playoff time, and things get a lot tougher to do. And, you know, the fourth line hasn't been like awful by any stretch, but Noel Achari and Matt Nieto and Jeff Carter, like that line does give me kind of a last year flavor of I'm not really too interested in watching this kind of deal.
No, I mean, if you're a goaltending fan, having them on the ice and you're a Penguins fan, it at least means that you're going to watch Nedeljkovic and Jarry have to come up with some good shit. But that's the only positive I can come out of that bottom three.
Well, I'll say this. That's happened. Good for Tristan Jarry coming out. Even in the loss against Chicago, he had a .914 save percentage. He played well. And then followed that up with a shutout. And Nedeljkovic coming in, he saw 36 shots, stopped 34 of them. He had a .944 save percentage. That's huge. And I'm not expecting .944 every time out for me. But being competent, it will allow Jarry to not be overworked, which leads to the overuse, and it led to injuries, clearly, and it really cost the team when they leaned into Jarry so hard and his body didn't hold up. So
I stand by a 50 game limit for any goalie before they hit the playoffs. And if he gets to 58, 59, that's a problem.
So good on the goaltenders. Three games in, really, really solid. I think a 9.
Well, Nedeljkovic.
934 overall. Nedeljkovic kept them in that. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you're right. He kept them in that game. Because they got absolutely caved the first 6 minutes. And then, like you said, that second period was not great either. And he kept it a one goal game against Markstrom, who did play quite well.
Yeah, Markstrom, like, I know, like, third period got away from him, but, like, that one scramble in front where Gensel swatted at it on the power play and it stayed out. I know that a little bit lucky, but you know, even still, I thought Markstrom had some nice stops there. And
I mean, Calgary need him to be Markstrom, not last year Markstrom. And
well, ain't that the thing about goaltending?
Yeah, I know. You could say that about quite a lot of teams. Not like we can't say that about one that we follow quite closely. Calgary will be an interesting team through the year as well, because they're a little bit like Pittsburgh on a redemption tour for a season that was wasted. So
I think Sutter squashed a lot of those guys offensively. And
oh yeah,
sure, that can be the excuse. But if they, Sutter's not there anymore, so Huberdeau, like, that excuse is gone. He needs to,
mm-hmm.
you know, that contract. The back end was always going to be one of those things that is like, yeah, not great, but, you know, you'll at least have the now. He needs to give them the now.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Kadri, I've always liked as a player, yeah, so he should be good.
Yeah, it's the one problem with having Alan Walsh as your agent. The way he behaves in public, it does put extra pressure on you to perform, because he's very, very vocal in regards to Huberdeau. So he definitely needs to put up or shut up.
Yeah, I criticize his clients. I've long since been blocked.
Oh really? Jesus.
Oh yeah.
How childish is that? Good God.
It was during the Fleury playoff struggles.
I was gonna say, was it that one? Yeah.
Which one? I don't know which of the years, but it was.
No, there was three there.
The 2010 probably to 2013 halfway. Stretch was when that went down.
I reckon it was probably halfway through 12. God. You would have gone nuts. Because at that point, that's two in a row, and then you get to yeah. Listen, stop making me agree with you about Fleury.
One more positive I'll find. Bottom pairing. Doing really good. Pierre-Olivier Joseph and Chad Ruedel. They lead the team in expected goals percentage.
It's funny what happens when you can shelter them a little bit. And I've always liked Ruedel. And you said this a couple of times. Well, not last year, but I think the year before. Or maybe it was in the July podcast. Why the hell does he keep signing in Pittsburgh? Because he never gets any... Hopefully he gets the stick this time and he actually gets to play, you know, all season if he doesn't get injured. Because he's more than... He's competent, right? I don't think he's... He won't screw up an awful lot. And I think he probably gives P.A. Joseph some confidence to roam around a little bit, which is his wheelhouse.
Yeah, so, like, the years prior, for sure... Last year, his underlings were not where they were prior. Mm-hmm. He's 33, so like I don't want to die on the Chad Ruedel hill, because the wheels could fall off at any moment. But he's always been there, and he's never been a huge problem when he's been in. No. And him and Joseph have done a really nice job in their small sample to start the year. They... you know, they're the bottom pairing, so they're going to get bottom pairing minutes. Letang and Carlson are almost at 60 minutes played so far at 5-on-5, and Ruedel's at 27. And that makes sense. Like, I'm not saying, like, that's wrong, but in the minutes he's been given, it's been fine.
Yeah.
I would argue you could even bump him a little bit with the minutes as we get going here to save both of those two. So.
Yeah, they might.
It's just nice to see players slotted where they should be and them having the success they should have in those roles. So early on, bottom pairing, pretty good.
It feels like all the stuff that drove me batty last year has been looked at, attempted to be resolved or improved, and the only one that glaringly sticks out at me, and it's a very, very big one, is the bottom six forwards. Now, that's still fixable, whether it's internally bringing up guys that can push the offense a little bit more or acquisitions later on in the season. But it does make this team much more fun to watch. Last year was a slog, even with Gino and Sid playing all 82.
And well.
It was a tough slog to watch. They actually look like they're enjoying themselves. I know it's three games in, all those caveats, but they actually look like they're enjoying themselves a little bit more this year, which just, as you said, no illusions in regards to cup or bust as a fan. It's much more enjoyable to watch. They just look like they're enjoying themselves. I wonder if, you know how they often say that the fish rots from the head? I legitimately wonder whether the dour, boring, stoic Ron Hextall just permeated through the entire franchise.
Well, he would lock himself in his office and not talk to anybody, and Dubas is learning everybody's first name in the entire building. So just that kind of energy. Jeez, to work from somebody who, through,
that's a generational
through action,
difference.
Cares.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's there for 7 years in theory, so you want to start off on the right foot.
Now, you said like they can fix the bottom six. I'm a little more pessimistic about that. Why is that? You're just the group they're pulling from internally. There's just not a lot of high ceilings there.
I'm not after high
ceilings. No, I mean high ceilings.
They
even
just don't have the talent in there.
High ceilings even within the parameters of what you're looking for.
Yeah, okay. Gotcha.
Like the HBK Kessel. Like that was a big part
look,
of
it. Look, I'm not asking for that now though. I can't expect that. They don't have the assets to acquire that either.
Well, I don't know. Like if you're willing to part with the first round pick, which they've used their last
75 million.
No, I'm saying like they actually used the draft pick to draft somebody.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Yep.
Braden Jaeger, who is probably their most promising prospect in quite a long time, but they've also been trading. It makes sense why they haven't had one, and it's not wrong that they haven't had one, based on what you know where they've been as an organization and their goals. You can talk about what they used the first round picks on.
Yeah.
Not that they did though. So he's having a nice start to the year. Owen Pickering, you know, every time I hear him, people speak about him, it's never anything about his offense, and you know, I don't think you should be using first round picks on like a Brian Dumoulin.
No.
Type player, which is what it sounds like is the case there. Sam Poulin had an okay camp, and of course he had his time off last year, but he's starting the year down in Wilkes-Barre to get him a lot of minutes because he wouldn't get them. He'd probably be like the 13th forward otherwise. So
I agree. Yep.
I think you're going to, like, if the team shows Kyle Dubas that they're competitive, they're not competing for a playoff spot, they're competing for more, I think he would be willing to maybe use that draft capital to boost things up. I would think that if the Coyotes are out of it, that maybe Jason Zucker could make his way back. Although I did look into that. I thought maybe he'd have like a no trade of some kind, but he's got nothing. So the bidding will be probably price them out, maybe, if Zucker's having a good year. But things like that, like you got to look around the league and Dubas certainly will. I think real tangible changes to this bottom six will have to come from outside the organization. So.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. It would just be nice if somebody came out of nowhere that just, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be very cool.
that would be like, cool. Like you said, though, the talent level that they've... Owen Pickering is a really good example, right? Drafting for the wrong type of player that can just suddenly click and go, all right, all of that amazing skill that you've drafted for clicks into something explosive.
I think Jaeger can be in that mold of like somebody that will actually move the needle offensively, but he's not... The problem with making that pick is... He's not close.
No, that's right.
In the scheme of the window that they have.
Yeah, and once again, it's the challenge of this part of the organization always runs bare because of the way draft picks are utilized to try and go for the
Now, this I will say, they came really close to having this happen because I'm pretty sure the Penguins would have taken Zach Benson with their pick. The Sabres took him the immediate pick before them. He made the Sabres roster out of training camp and is playing a regular shift right now. So they came close. But
yeah, you take what you've got available when you're on the clock. It's as good as you can do. And
no, I'm just saying, like, what if he fell one and they take him? Like, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you've said this for, I think, ever since we started the podcast. Always draft for the highest talented player or the best talented player, sort of no matter what position, really, that you've got on the slot. Always go for the talent. Don't go for this person does these other things well. Swing for the fences.
And I feel that even in the lower rounds, as time moves on, like, I'd have an argument. I'd listen to an argument, like, filling holes with later round picks, but, like, who cares? Like, you can always find NHL-ready talent to fill in league average or worse.
Those holes. Yep.
Just take your home run
Pittsburgh
cuts.
Done that well
take
lately.
Your home run cuts every time you make a draft selection. And
absolutely.
Then one might hit, and then when it hits, it actually means something. It's not like, oh, we got a 12-goal right winger. Great. I could have, you know. They just signed it, Achari. Like,
actually, one thing about the bottom six I will say is a positive. They feel faster. I don't know if they are. And maybe it's the Nieto part of it. Because he is quick.
Yep.
He does forecheck quite well. But if you don't have somebody out there that can finish, the forecheck and trapping it down there, I don't know. I'm trying to come up with a positive out of nowhere.
Well, the fourth line's been okay. Like, even with Carter, it's been fine. And, you know, I haven't written or said on this podcast about benching Carter at all because I don't think that's going to happen in the near future.
Agree.
So I'm just going to live with the hand that's been dealt to us. And fourth line right wing, like, that's where he needs to be. Right?
Yes.
Like, if they're not going to bench him, like, that's where he should be. And so far, it's been okay, if you have realistic expectations of what okay looks like, or maybe even a little above okay. He's 52.7 expected goals for percentage. That's highly acceptable.
Okay. Yeah.
I just wish he didn't lose his scoring touch.
Well, that's what made the trade so acceptable. You sort of knew the shortcomings, but he could finish. So you just had to get him to the spot.
He was skating really well originally on that trade, and that really fell off. But that's what happens when you trade for late 30s players.
Age.
And the trade still would have been fine. It's Ron Hextall's extension that made it unfine.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you're stuck with it, and you've just got to deal with it.
Definitely stuck with it. Because he gave him a front-loaded contract by a few $100,000. And the new rules, as long as it's not front-loaded, you can buy them out or get rid of them or whatever. But Hextall, the way he did it, made all of that null and void. So Carter would either need to be allergic to his equipment.
Nah.
Or get traded, but he has like a full no movement clause, I believe. So there he is. He's playing. So far, fine. Not going to beat up the guy for, you know, doing pretty good.
Oh, that's freaking hilarious. Nicely put, right?
But the third line's got to be better. And what makes me a little curious as to why that's so low is I think Harkins has got they got to move off of that quick, sooner than later. If the next game, who knows, maybe they will in the next few days in practice. But Drew O'Connor, historically speaking, like, most people are hoping there's more offense this year, because in the preseason he kind of showed it.
Yeah.
He's in his age 26 season, so he's not a prospect. Like, this is...
No, he's past it.
This is when he needs to get his traction going as an NHL player, and I think seeing his expected goal so low is an alarm bell, because his has always been high in the roles that he's played. Like, he's always been a really competent depth player, even if the offense wasn't there. And I was hoping, okay, expected goals, that'll be where it needs to be. Let's add some real goals to the equation.
Yeah.
And so far, through three games, that line's been ass.
I feel like it could be line mate related. So the question is, O'Connor looked his best next to probably the best player on the team, unsurprisingly, in the preseason. So it will be interesting for me to see whether he gets moved up or down the lineup, or they just, you know, mix and match that bottom six.
I think he's appropriately at third line left wing. Like, Gensel and Smith aren't going anywhere.
No. I fully understand that part of it, but I just wonder whether they flip him. I feel like the two guys he's playing with at the moment, they're the difference with the way he played comparative to last year. And maybe they can't mix and match it with the bottom six or flip and flop him somewhere.
So, me, like, Lars Eller, they've committed to. Dubas felt strongly enough, like, that's my third line center. Harkins is just a guy off the waiver wire recently, so that's the one that's going to change.
Yes, it's just, I get your concern with O'Connor. The thing that's been interesting so far this season is it hasn't looked like he's been able to even get himself into a spot where he might be able to score.
Well, yeah, they don't get down there that often.
No. I know, but when they're down there, it's like he just doesn't seem to be able to get anywhere near the in between the dots to do anything that would be productive. Which in the preseason, he could cut inside the dots and do stuff. So that's all. It's just, I feel like at the moment I'm going to reserve my judgment. Not that you were saying he's toast, of course. Reserve my judgment on him until I see him with other people.
Well, I think he's going to be with Eller.
Well, then he could be toast by association.
And Eller's been a competent player for a long time, so I'm willing to let that one play out. But Harkins, I have no attachment to. He had a great AHL season last year, but he was like, I think he might be 26 years old as well.
Yeah.
And
like you
26
said,
years old, point per game in the AHL is not as impressive as it sounds as far as projecting onto NHL success. So, yeah, he is 26. He's going to be 27.
Well, sometime this season, yeah. Interestingly, Sullivan... last year, because he didn't have a lot of tools in the toolkit, didn't really change the lineup much. This year, it feels like he's got more options to at least rotate through that bottom six.
And his boss has mentioned as such.
Yes, I hope he is more flexible, because he's got the options there to try different things down there to see what can work. Because the penalty kill last year as well, which comprises a lot of that bottom six, was not particularly fantastic last year compared to the year before, and it needs to improve.
I think it will because of the speed.
Yeah, but he's got options is all I'm saying. So hopefully he can be a little bit more flexible, because I feel like if he's not more flexible this year, I'll feel like, and he doesn't get like the overall sort of general media criticism of just he's stuck in his ways, that sort of stuff. I'm struggling to articulate what I want here. Hopefully you kind of get what I'm saying. He needs to try different things, particularly with that bottom six, because quite clearly it's not working at the moment, and you can't sit there for 15 games with these same six players and go, oh, now I'll change it. He needs to do it in like 5-game buckets, personally.
No, I agree. And Kyle Dubas spoke to that they have more options. He's been working in lockstep with Sullivan since he got there, so I assume they're on the same page with that.
Same page.
Now,
fingers crossed.
One other Sullivan thing, which is something I've harped on for years, but I'm gonna load it up with steroids this time around.
Yeah.
I want him to be more clever at the end of periods. And before, that was just, can we please use Crosby and Malkin together after penalties or at the end of periods using TV timeouts, that kind of stuff. Well, I'm cranking it up. No longer is Sid and Gino good enough. I want Sid, Gino, Gensel, Carlson, Letang all on the ice at the end of a period, not just the end of the game chasing a goal.
Yeah, no, I'm all for that. The last minute and a half, I agree.
Let's go. Like, like, treat it like a literal video game sometimes, Mike. Just, you gotta be able to do that, because you can still come back with, like, Pettersson and Graves. And,
well, not only that, though, you've still got Raquel, Smith,
Rust. I know Rust. That out of those three, there's not a center, so put Eller or whatever. Like, you're already pushing your cards, your chips to the center of the table when you put those five out there.
Yep. No, I absolutely agree.
I mean, the 5 one is end of the second period or something like that, where there's not a shift after, usually.
Yes.
Kind of deal. But I'm just putting that out there into space, and I want it out there because I think that would be really fun.
We should have a clock counter for the end of every period where it's like, that's a 0-1. That zero that period, he did it there, so that's 2 for the year. Count them through.
I don't think it'll ever happen other than chasing a goal at the very end.
That's just, it's the one thing that you can get there and say about, but you said this at the time, Bosma was great at it. And you know what, going back to I've been running on the treadmill a fair bit, so I'm watching the 08 season because I downloaded all their wins. Believe it or not, Michel Therrien did it an awful lot as well. I didn't think he did. He got Sid and Gino out there quite a lot through, I think I'm up to about, I'm past the Winter Classic game against Buffalo. So
I was there.
Yeah, smart ass. He does it an awful lot in that second half of the season because I'm still in the Ty Conklin part of the year because Fleury's still out with the high ankle sprain.
You're a sick fuck for going back and watching all that.
They're really, really easy to watch. Look, watching that and running on the treadmill for 25 minutes makes it very, very easy because I can't watch the live games because I'm not watching a minute 30 of ads while I'm freaking running. Screw that for a joke.
I hear you.
I find it very odd that this particular coach doesn't do it. Compared to the coaches prior that do. It's an interesting...
What the odds are would be, the percentages of how many just coaches that have been in the league that would do it as few times as Sullivan. I can't imagine it would be high. I think most coaches would be like, let's do it.
Yeah, let's load up the 5. I want to see the 5. That's a great call, right?
Give me the 5.
Correct.
So, yeah. Is there... I think we pretty much covered most every guy on the lineup, and we've only had 3 games.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And the other thing is, it's like work's starting to contact me. I should probably go and start doing my job.
Oh, very good. Very good. And in an hour, the Buffalo Bills have a football game. So, yeah, gotta get ready for that. Gotta get my Zubas pants on.
Oh, you idiot.
I really am, though.
All right, let's get out of here.
I really am. Going to get them as soon as the podcast is done.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
All right. Well, it was great to be back. And Cam, of course, it's always awesome when we get together and are able to do this.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
So, you know, what's working in our favor this year for doing this is it's more interesting and fun. Can't lie. Some of the issue with like doing a podcast is the team was just, it was blah, and now it's not.
It's not even. Yeah, they don't have to, it's one of those things where they don't have to be good. They have to be interesting. You've got to have stuff to talk about. It's like when this team rotates around to the other side of this ridiculously lucky run that we've had, stuff's going to have to happen and stuff's going to have to change, and it's going to be those conversations that'll be fun to talk about. It's not like when they're terrible that I want this to go away. It'll literally be, we'll have a different set of items to talk about. There was nothing to talk about last year that wasn't spoken about the year before. And probably the year before that as well. They were the same problems. I just never solved.
And it wouldn't make for at least good podcasting this time to say the same things over and over again.
No, that's exactly right. So,
although I will say, I will be saying over and over again, it kicks ass watching Erik Karlsson. So that is going to be on.
Yes, this is very true. Very, very true. All right, I better go, or I'm going to get myself into trouble.
All righty. Thank you, everyone, and we'll catch you next time.
See you guys.